Welcome back to this monthly meeting of the Parks, Arts, and Culture Committee of Denver City Council. Join us and the Parks, Arts, and Culture Committee starting now.
Welcome to Parks, Art, and Culture Committee. My name is Flora Alvidres. I'm the committee chair, and I represent Lucky District Number 7. And I'll start introductions here on my left with council members.
Well, good morning, Daryl Watson, from District 9.
Good morning, Diana Romero-Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Great, well, we are so excited to hear from Parks and Rec this morning and Water Conservation. So if you all wanna introduce your team and then go ahead and get started, that would be great.
Of course, Jill Kaufman, Director of Park Operations.
Yeah, hi, my name's Damian Wetzel. I'm the Water Conservation Manager.
And I'm Lynn Fulton. I'm a crew lead in the Water Conservation Department.
Awesome. Take it away. Your slides are now up there.
Great. Well, thanks for having us. Like I said, I'm the Water Conservation Manager. Water Conservation.
Nice. Beautiful.
I love that.
Yeah, that's. We got a few more drone pictures coming up later. We have in-house drone pilot.
Oh, I was going to say, how did you get that picture?
We have three licensed pilots. Sorry. In Parks and Rec.
Okay, awesome. Sorry.
That was back in COVID when the Civic Center crew mowed the, our names are over it, but they mowed the heart.
How sweet.
So yeah, Water Conservation is a group that works throughout the whole city, but we're housed under the Park Operations umbrella. And thanks for having us today. We're here to talk about all things irrigation. Irrigation is basically the invisible lifeblood of the Parks and Rec system. Unfortunately, you really only see it when something's wrong with it. You know, you got a broken head or it's running when it's not supposed to, but for the majority of the time, it's doing what it's supposed to, and it's what enables us to have our beautiful park system here in the high arid climate that Denver is. So we have a myriad of challenges managing such a large system in Denver parks. We use over 2 billion gallons of water a year. That costs the city a little over $5 million a year. We are Denver Water's largest customer on a volume basis. And then a lot of the challenges recently is high temperatures, very unpredictable weather. I mean, it was just 80 some degrees on Sunday in November. And then we also have increased our acreage recently. Acquiring a lot of new land, so that adds more work to the staff. And then the pressure on the system has increased quite a bit as well with the growing population and everyone getting outdoors and in the parks. That puts a lot of pressure on our park system and the irrigation system. And then recently the cost of doing business has gone up just like everything else. I started with Denver Parks 15 years ago as an irrigation tech in the Montbello and Green Valley Ranch area. And back then, we used commercial quality like irrigation heads. It was about $20. Now that same sprinkler head costs about $80.
Wow.
We also estimate that the pressure and vandalism has gone up by 50% since the COVID days. So a lot of theft, copper theft, and then just, you know, kicking heads off and whatnot in the middle of the night. So that's gone up quite a bit. But here in the Water Conservation Department, we are achieving the game plan goal of adapting to our changing climate. And that's through a lot of different water efficiency strategies. And a big one that we implemented is the central control build out. And I'm gonna go into that in quite a bit more depth. But just an overview of our infrastructure. Right now, our staffing levels, we have 38 irrigation maintenance technicians across the city, and that's managing 3,300 irrigated acres. So that's all of our park land that has irrigation. It doesn't include mountain parks or some areas in our metro parks that don't have irrigation. We estimate that to contain 250,000 sprinkler heads. So it's a massive system. And if you break that down for each irrigation technician, they're responsible by themselves for around 87 acres, which would have 6,500 irrigation heads, and then everything associated with that maintenance throughout the year, which we, the irrigation season is typically April 15th through October 15th. So they're responsible for activating the system, running through inspections, zone checks, you know, if you find anything wrong, making timely repairs. We adhere by the Denver Water rules of making those repairs within 10 days. We usually get to them much quicker than that. And then winterization. So you probably see them out there with the large air compressors blowing irrigation out as we speak. Another challenge that we face, so we have a little over 300 parks. 85 of those have irrigation infrastructure that's over 40 years old. And if you dive a little deeper into those numbers, actually 120 of those 300 parks have irrigation that's 35 years or older. And then around 40 actually have irrigation that's 50 years old. So, I mean, you think about your house and the different things you have to do at your home. They tell you your roof is usually good for 30 years. Well, that's a typical lifespan of irrigation too. So we face a lot of challenges out there with older irrigation systems that we're trying to keep operational and efficient. So the water conservation team was created within Denver Parks. Originally, it was just one person responsible for paying the water bill and implementing some efficiencies and doing some trainings. And it's now, we now built up a team. We have a few crews all concentrating on, you know, water efficiencies and water quality and multiple things like that. Today, we're going to focus on irrigation and central control. It's the tool that we identified that really helps us with all those challenges that I mentioned earlier. Central control is what you commonly refer to as smart irrigation. So it's an irrigation controller that's either connected to the internet. Here at the city, it's connected into the city network, and we communicate to it via radios, or the new ones now are cellular. So central control is really a tool that we use to be efficient with our watering. We have over 700 individual central control units. So that's like an irrigation clock all throughout the city, making us one of the largest systems in the nation. So water conservation, Lynn and the rest of the team, we keep that infrastructure going. And we help all the staff, train all the staff on it, make everyone be able to utilize this tool. We also, about 8 years ago, created an in-house team that does the build-out. So we go to an older irrigation controller that's not a smart irrigation controller connected to the network and swap it out for a central control unit. So we've done a lot of that in-house. And we use a proactive approach, utilizing technology to ensure that this system is reliable and works for everyone, all those maintenance techs and park operation managers out there. We're conserving water, reducing operating costs. We can help identify problems and direct people to where they're at, to one of those 250,000 sprinkler heads out there. And also, it's going to protect the long-term health of our parks. Another big initiative with water conservation is we establish water budgets, and then we track those through an irrigation consumption report. And we send that out on a monthly basis to park operations. So here it is. This is just two of the tables off of the consumption report. We send this out on a monthly basis during that irrigation season, I was telling you, from April through October. This is couple charts from the latest one, P9, the ninth month, so this is through the September water bill from Denver Water, and the top is the summary on water usage. So We break it down for all of our districts. So our park operations team is separated into maintenance districts, basically the four segments of the city. And then the middle is the DPO. That's the one on the bottom, stands for Downtown Park Operation. And if you look at the total on the bottom, through September, we've used 70% of our water budget. So all our water managers are doing a good job this year.
Can I interject something? So Councilman Hines and Councilman Watson, DPO would represent both of you in this slide, and Councilwoman Romero, you would be under the East tab. So if you're wondering,
I was.
I could see it.
We have a map coming up a little later that'll it's kind of a busy map, but I mean it's pretty well quadrant, you know, four quadrants of the city, and then DPO is kind of in the middle. We count our water in 1,000-gallon units, so that 1 million year-to-date consumption, that's actually 1.14 billion gallons so far. And this is just water from the Denver water bill. We don't track. We have a couple other water sources. We have some wells out there that like fill up Lollipop Lake at Garland. Cherry Creek has a well behind it. And then City Ditch, which flows through Wash Park and City Park, is not part of this. So that's what gets us to that 2 billion number that I mentioned earlier. The bottom chart is some of the data that we gather. We really, to be efficient with water, you want to apply the right amount of water to keep your park plant material healthy. So we track that through ET, which stands for evapotranspiration. That's kind of how much water the plant takes up, also how much evaporates. So it's how much water you have to put back on the park to have healthy plant material. So you look at the far right column, that's historical. So that's kind of 20 years all averaged. So it's pretty interesting to see. This year was a pretty average weather year. But it's interesting, other years, I mean, it's irrigation usage is like a roller coaster, just with the weather, basically. So if you look at the far right, historically, at this time of year, the ET is 32 inches of water. And then if you go down, the blue line is precipitation. So that's rainfall. So you take the ET, you minus rainfall, and you get how much water you have to put back on the park. Then you look at system efficiency, that's 70%. That's an industry standard. Irrigation is about 70% efficient. I mean, there's obviously some misting or runoff or whatnot. And then, so that's how we create our adjusted irrigation requirement. So that's our IWR, our irrigation water requirement. So we send out to all the park districts so they could see how much they've actually applied and how much they've actually needed to apply. So that was kind of deep into the weeds there, but we're definitely a data centric department. So another step in being efficient with our water use is looking at all the different landscapes, how much water they actually need. Parks has done a big study called Landscape Typologies, and that's the grid on the left there. That's got a few more categories than in the gray is like our irrigation water requirements. So we break out areas and say how much water is needed for that certain landscape type. So an event high use area example is Civic Center Park, has a lot of pressure, or like the meadow at City Park, or the meadows at Wash Park that are highly permitted and just have a lot of people out there. Athletic fields need 32 inches of water a year. Those are, you know, Kennedy Soccer, Lowry Sports Complex, those type of fields. Traditional park is kind of, you know, your normal neighborhood park, like La Raza Park or Schaefer, Daly Park. the medians, we try to do apply less water out there. We try to have xeric plant material out there. Or if there is grass out there and it's a little drier, we're okay with that, just to be efficient with our water. And then the last one is native areas. You see a lot of our new parks have quite a bit of native area in them. They require 8 inches of water a year. So if you remember the last slide, this year, on average, we have got 10 inches of water. So that's plenty of rainfall for these native areas. So really those areas have irrigation just to establish that plant material. But once that stuff's established, we can turn off irrigation in those areas. So here's a couple pictures of what we go through for the central control build out. We're about 95% done. The only spots left are a few of our bigger median areas, and we'll try to, you know, leverage that conversion with projects and whatnot going forward. Starting about 8 years ago, the Water Conservation Department has done a bunch of the installs in-house, saving us quite a bit of money. We've installed 235 units, and of which 55 of those are the new cellular units. So you probably recognize picture on the left is you got the old metal pole with the green box on top. You see them around town are often rusty and leaning over. We got to rip that out. We pour a new concrete pad. And then on the right is one of our central control units. A big part of this build out, it was also creating the city weather network. And Lynn's going to go into a little more detail with that, but that is also tied into our central control network so that we can really be proactive when programming with weather as a big factor. So with that, I will turn it over to Lynn.
Thank you, Damian. We sat down as a group and we realized that we needed a central control weather network because the old way of what we used to have out there just wasn't working. And we've all had that neighbor, right? That neighbor that it's raining and you look out your window and his sprinklers are running. Yeah. And we didn't want to be that neighbor. So we first found what we were looking for, the product we were looking for, which a full weather station is the one on the right, and then rain cups we have, the one on the left. We put them throughout the city to cover the entire city. And then we sat down with the districts and with individual users, and we asked them about the parameters that they wanted for these stations, which I didn't say there are 20 of them. There's 8 full weather stations and 12 rain cups. And I'm going to show you in the next slide how this kind of picks up. But we sat down with our users and we said, what do you want these parameters to be? And we made parameters for the entire city so that when we do have these weather events, they shut down our system. They stop watering. Central control stops watering. And the potential on a full shutdown in the height of the season is 30 million gallons of water saved and $70,000 saved. Now, if I may say, it's a very sexy number. It doesn't always come out that way.
You may say.
Last year, in 2024, we had 4 full shutdowns. But in 2024, we had 31 total shutdowns. And if you're a weather nerd like me, what I've seen is how these storms come into the city. And they come in through the southwest, and they kind of wrap around the city and then go toward the northeast, and they kind of die out. So the southwest has seen a lot of rain shutdowns, where the northeast hasn't seen quite as many. So on the next slide, I'm going to get into our very busy map, but you'll understand what we're talking about when we talk about our districts and how the city's split with us. So we have our districts, the northwest, southwest, east, that very small DPO in there, and then on the top right, the Northeast District. And what this map represents is not only how our weather stations are out there in the city, but also our antenna network that talks to the older clocks the older central control clocks that we have. The newer stuff is all cellular-based. There's never an issue. But the older stuff is all dependent on this antenna infrastructure. And even though there are white gaps in there, that's all for our antennas. Our weather network talks to every clock in the city. Every central control clock in the city is tied to this network. And if there's a rain shutdown, it talks to those units and it shuts them down. And on that, then the other part of my job is also service calls. So I deal with the hardware and software with our central control system. And since 2018, I've had 1,200 plus service calls that I've gone on to fix this equipment. And I am proud to say I have a 90% one-day success rate on this. So when I first came to the city, I was a maintenance tech. If there was a clock issue, I had to go to my boss, who went to his boss, who would then call the vendor to make the decision to call the vendor, hey, come out, we need you to come look at this clock. There may be an issue here. So I could maybe get the vendor to come out the next day, the day after, and it was just, basically it was a long process. So what we've done in water conservation is we have made ourselves more self-sufficient, more efficient with this, and really we've kind of taken that reliance on our vendors out of the equation. We still use them, but we have enough parts and ability to keep our clocks running. And then the other part is the training part. We've developed a great training, or you know how technology is and how quickly technology moves. We've developed training with our new cellular-based system that we've kind of put out to all our techs in the city. We've gone from guys using an old, like, handheld radio, like the police radios to get things going. Now they can use their phones, not only to turn things on, but they can actually program clocks then and there with their phone, where before they'd have to write down whatever they're trying to do, go back to their shop, put it in their database, and get it out there. So we're moving forward with this. This is stuff where, you know, real-time changes can be made. This is running too long. This isn't running long enough. Change it right then and there. And I'm really proud of what we've done and what's been accomplished in our department. And I want to talk to you about the future of what we're looking at and what we want to do. But before I tell you that, I want to share some of the current challenges that we have. And one of those is with our build-out, we're coming through and we're taking that old clock out and we're putting a new clock in there. But what we are doing is we're taking the old program that was in that clock and we're putting it in the new clock. And while it fits in with park standards from historic, it's not quite what we're looking for. And what you're seeing out there, what we're seeing out there is rotors, large turf rotors that are running for 30 minutes and small pop-up sprays that are running for 15 minutes. Because that's what the person before did, and the person before them did, and the person before them did. And it doesn't take into account any of the park requirements, turf watering requirements. And really, it's just a reactive way to water. It's a one-size-fits-all approach. So what we're coming in and doing with the changes we're making in central control is now I'm coming in, I'm going to these parks, and I'm getting the specific data for these parks. What are these heads? What are these zones? What are they doing? And it allows us to change our watering time decisions. It allows us to customize it by park, by turf type. And it's really what we're going for is a proactive approach to it. And kind of the way we talk about it is you can buy off the rack or you can get custom made. This is custom made.
I think if I could just mention, all of you probably hear this, but a common complaint is I'm walking early in the morning and the paths are saturated with water, right? We hear that too. And so one of my requests is to work with this group to identify or design a system or time that we can alleviate that. It's not easy, because as a park system, I kind of explained, you also see those questions around My park's watering 7 days a week. I know you hear that. I hear that too. Ideally, that may be true in optic, but it's not true in reality, as if you have 7,000 sprinkler heads, you have only a certain number of days to run those heads. So it's things like that that Lynn and Damien can identify and resolve pretty quickly. Pretty proud of that.
And really, like Jill's saying, this is the future. This is what we're looking for. This is what we're heading toward as the build-out completes and we really start to get in this as a group. It's programming of water conservation. We're looking to refresh that outdated irrigation programming. We're looking for data-driven results for the success of all parks. You know, the new, Damien had touched on the new hybrid parks coming that, you know, have smaller irrigated bluegrass areas, larger native turf areas. Maybe they have athletic fields and, you know, maybe it's a combination of everything. We're looking to do that right. And we're gonna assume the responsibility of running these databases. And we feel conservatively that we can save tech time and have them out in the field. We feel 300 hours is kind of a low number, actually, but it's 300 hours that they're out in the field and they're fixing things. And maybe the constituent call isn't, what are you doing over there? But maybe it's, what you're doing over there is great and it looks really good. That's what we're hoping for on this, with this program. And, sorry, I forgot to say, another thing we're very excited about is our OpenGov cartograph system, where our work orders, we can use our phones. It's not, you're not emailing somebody, you're not, you know, calling somebody up. You are sending a specific work order to a specific group, and they see on their phone that they've got something that they need to get done, and they'll get to that, and then they send it back whenever they're done. And it goes the same for me. They can go out, I have an issue here, I'm getting that day. So we're really excited about OpenGov and using it for our work order system.
So now we conclude the presentation with a few more cool drone photos.
Just for Councilor Watson.
No, it actually, like you're saying, it's a very, it's a great tool. We have the drone program housed in water conservation. Like I said, we have three FAA licensed pilots in the whole parks department. But we can utilize it to monitor projects going on in parks, or when we make a change to a park as a team, we can see if it's successful or not successful. So this is Greenway Park out in the Central Park area. And this park is irrigated by recycled water. And we went in to do a couple different strategies. We added a magnetic device, which helps mitigate some of the detriments of recycled water. So it actually makes the nutrients in the recycled water more bioavailable for the plant material. And it also reduces the friction of the water molecules, helping the irrigation spray a little bit farther and more efficiently. And then Lynn stepped into this area and did some of his programming optimization. So I probably should have did a before and after, but we were monitoring that big meadow in the front there. You see still has a couple dry areas, but we actually reduced the water there and got the area to improve, be more uniformly green, healthier turf. So the drone was the tool so that we could see if what we were doing was actually working.
Great. Well, thank you all so much. This has been so informative. I appreciate you digging in to some of the details and science. And I just want to, before we go to council person questions, two things. I want to welcome Councilman Hines, Councilwoman Lewis, and Councilwoman Parody to the meeting. And I also wanted to just let everyone know that I was talking to Jill before this, and she was saying that they take this presentation around to other municipalities and other governments that are looking to us because we are leading the way in our work in this area. So kudos to the team in that, and I feel lucky to have you all here in your excellence.
Thank you. So, yes, we've been recognized at the National Recreation Park Association, where Damien and I presented on water conservation, and we're probably the leader Love probably.
That. Yes. But, we're going to go ahead and call you later.
I'm going to own it. And I'll share a quick story if you don't mind. But sure. I was that person who would get that call back before this job, and we'd have to run around at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and hand turn off controllers because it was going to rain. So think about that in 7,000 irrigation clocks now, right? What we were at before.
700,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yep. 7,000 of those little guys. It was exhausting. So we've really moved the needle. So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, we'll start with Councilman Watson. McHugh.
Thank you, Committee Chair. I've got a chuckle a little bit. My mom's not watching because we kept out too late last night. But her favorite TV show is Law & Order. And she loves the spinoffs. Law and Order, Criminal Intent. It's her addiction. She's got to watch those. I was thinking with Parks and Rec, we could have a spinoff to Water Conservation Unit. So Parks and Rec, WCU. We could start y'all, because this is this is exciting work that you're doing. And I could see the enthusiasm that you display for not just the technology, but the outcomes for our neighborhood. So really appreciate the presentation. I was curious on the technology. You shared the central command center that you're programming all of the irrigation through. You're programming new pipes and old pipes. What's the life cycle or the impacts of programming one technology for that entire kind of old and new? Is there breakages? Do we have to replace some of those old irrigation faster so that the central command can really work at the highest level? I'm just curious, with old and new, what are the what breakages are you seeing?
So one of the pieces of equipment that we install whenever we do central control conversion, so going into an old park that has the old controllers or a couple controllers, usually has one point of connection for the water. So we put what's called a master valve and a flow sensor at the point of connection, the water source, and the master valve and flow sensor is wired to the controller. So you then learn, and that's the controller learning how many gallons per minute is normal operating range for that irrigation system. So while a park's irrigating at night, the controller's talking with this flow sensor throughout the night, and all of a sudden the flow sensor spiked, you got a broken head or a old pipe broke. The flow sensor's like, you're running at 300 gallons a minute when you should be at 50, there's a problem. The master valve is one singular valve on the entire irrigation system that it'll go into a little test thing like, got a high flow alarm. Let's turn it off, turn it back on.
Okay.
Still got a high flow. So on the third time, it'll shut the whole system down.
It's intelligent enough to know to calibrate based on the old and new system.
Yeah, we tell the controller to do that. We put it in learn mode and say, we know the system is looking good. This is a normal operating range. But if something triggers it at night, it'll shut it down.
Two other quick questions. I know golf is its own authority. How are we evaluating or sharing information with your irrigation process for parks with golf? I would assume golf has, they are a top user for Denver Water. There are some triggers that you all are using that are similar. I'm curious on that.
Yes, so we collaborate with golf. Actually, that chart I did on the consumption report, that irrigation water requirement, we shared that with them. So we do the similar calculations. Golf systems are different than parks, and they are their separate entity. But yeah, we collaborate. We're talking with them next week on some of these new technologies that we're trying. So we, bounce stuff back and forth.
Are you aware they are integrating any of this technology? They're not here to speak for themselves.
Yes, they do have the same technology. And actually, even like a step above us. If you go to a golf headquarters, their superintendent has a big screen TV with their entire irrigation system across it. So they actually, and they'll actually adjust on the daily for that ET.
Oh, okay.
Whereas showing you, we send it out monthly. So because they're a little more, you know, managed a little bit more intensely than us. You know, they got the one golf course view that the superintendent is in charge of, where a district manager has 40, 50 parks. So they do have similar technology, for sure.
And yeah. The last question, committee chair, purple piping, you shared a little bit about that with the park in Central Park. Are we still leveraging the purple piping for the non-potable portable recycled water throughout the system, or we are just using it in specific parks like maybe City Park and others?
We have to partner with Denver Water on that because that's their system. So whenever Denver Water is, they've slowed down recently on expanding that, but about 25% of our parks are irrigated with the recycled water from the purple pipe. But we still do partner with them on converting parks to recycled water. So we are limited by wherever that infrastructure is, which is really in the Northeast, Northwest, a little bit in the East District. They're looking at expanding to Fairmount Cemetery. So we're looking at picking up a couple parks along that. So yeah, we have some great partnerships with Denver Water, and we'll work with them on that. It's just moving a little slower these days. Park Hill, the new park, is going to be irrigated by the purple pipe.
Purple pipes.
Okay. Yep. So the recycled water fills a pond that's kind of on the northeast side of the park, and then a pump station pulls from that pond to irrigate that park. So Park Hill will have recycled water. Actually, this picture right here is Veterans Park.
Yes.
You know, down by South High and I-25, and this little building up by the highway there, in between the two ball fields, that's the dechlorination station.
Okay.
For the purple pipe infrastructure. So they dechlor the water there, and then they fill City Ditch. So back when they did T-Rex, City Ditch used to flow underneath I-25. They didn't want that anymore. So City Ditch comes from Chatfield. So they cut it off, and Denver Water resupplied City Ditch with recycled water. So that's what fills Wash Park, City Park, and Denver Country Club.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Madam awesome, Chair. Wonderful. Thank you for your questions, Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Committee Chair. You're a native. Are you from Denver?
No.
Where are you guys from?
I'm from Alaska originally, but I moved to Colorado in 1992.
Which is because you called it City Ditch. I just figured it.
Yeah, you're right. That is
a term anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, so central control, I mean, I think that's awesome. Also, your presentation, I kept coming up with questions and you kept answering them. It's really frustrating for me. In case people don't get the automation that's possible, like I can, from my phone, control my lights, my air conditioning, my blinds, cameras, the fans, and more using my phone at home. I can change the brightness and color of my lights using my phone. It automatically raises the blinds when the sun rises, automatically lowers the blinds when it gets 80 degrees in my home. I set my, particularly in the summer, I set it so that it gets really warm because I'm trying to save,
sure.
Save power, save the planet. So, my question was, I sure hope that it saves water when it rains, and you already answered that. So I think that's fabulous that you're leaning into technology. I think that, you know, the technology for me as someone with a disability, it's harder for me to operate the blinds or behind a couch or, you know, whatever. But there's also an economic payoff too. As you say, it's you know, saved lots of water. It saved staff time going, you know, manually turning off the spigots, but it also it's the there's, you know, the perception as well, like when it's raining and the park's you know, sprinklers are still going. So I want to thank you for leaning into technology, and it's awesome that we're a national leader. That's
it's incredible.
Yeah, can we say leadist? we're the leadest of the, I don't know, maybe not.
I'll call it what you tell me to call it, but I think we are probably the leadest in the, in the nation.
I've seen water trucks in Cheeseman Park. I know that's not as related to technology, but is that what, is it reclaimed water or?
Most likely, forestry uses those trucks to supplementally water trees. It's generally potable, so depending on where they get the water from. You know, they have a tremendous amount of trees that they've planted. So while we work with them in its entirety to supply the correct amount of water, depending on the element, you know, right now it's really dry. Right, and most of our irrigation systems are down. You'll see them more prolifically across the city because they're adding that water over winter. So it's generally potable, and it's generally forestry adding supplemental water.
Is it possible that at some point the technology will be, you know, the, I think you mentioned Toro, a brand name, but that the technology will be able to differentiate turf grass? I think you were saying that you can spot areas that are native vegetation versus, you know, Western European vegetation. And I'm assuming at some point you'll also be able to detect, you know, spot trees that need more water or less water.
So we call that hydrozoning. So newer irrigation systems are hydrozoned. And so that's a separate zone for a different landscape type or a different type of plant material that requires a different amount of water. So you can do exactly what you're saying. So something that we've done in water conservation is tried to establish a universal labeling for all of our units. So you can go in and say zone one is turf with trees and zone two is just trees. And so new irrigation systems out, you know, where they're doing them in Northfield and all that, that'll have an irrigation zone just for trees. So, you know, we can avoid that supplemental watering. But in our older parks, where you just have big rotors, it's kind of spraying everything. So we can actually save water by dispatching those water trucks, and they're just watering new trees for establishment, and we're not blasting water over a big area. But yes, you're right. The new systems are hydrozoned for specific landscape types. It's labeled in the system, and we can group them together and program them all the same. And then when Lynn talked about the rain shutdowns, say we get a half inch of rain and we have a group of zones all for native vegetation, we could shut those down for 2 weeks. But if it's an athletic field and we get a half inch of rain, we're only gonna shut it down for like 2 days. So that's the next evolution of fine tuning the programming. We do have areas like that, but it's just, you know, the next step. So now that we're almost done with the central control build out, now it's this next evolution of really leveraging our efficiencies.
We have to, if I may, nerd out a little more on the weather. I've really pushed, and we started doing this year, like a shoulder season rain holds. So less rain, longer shutdown. Because, you know, in April, we don't need the amount of water in a park that we need in June or July. So we have, you know, I've pushed out the shoulder season, April, October, where we get a little bit of rain and we're shut off for a little bit longer. And just, that's one of my favorite things to do because, you know, you don't want to be driving to work. You don't need a constituent call on you April 17th. Why is this park watering? It's raining. You know, it might not be a quarter inch of rain, and you know, in the high season we want to water to that quarter inch of rain, but in the low season we don't need that. So that's one of the fun things we can do with our weather system.
Yeah, and making sure that we have microclimate accessibility, as in the 20 different stations, knowing you know, Denver's got some square mileage, and there are, you know, thunderstorms that happen in very localized areas, so may not rain for the entire city, or might rain hard in one spot and not so much the other.
We had Sloan's, we had an event at Sloan's. They got an inch in August, I think, start of August. It was Sloan's and Berkeley. Insurance, nobody else got that.
Yeah. We used to have a controller at I-25 and Steel Street. About every rainstorm, the lightning would knock that controller out. Oh. Nowhere else, just that one. Drove me crazy. So.
And so you're working with forestry as well? Or, I mean, they don't have to come up with their own set of technology. Yeah, super. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for your questions. Councilwoman Romero Campbell.
Thank you.
Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Committee Chair. So I'm interested a little bit, and great to know that I'm in East. It covers a little bit further up, and so I can dig down and maybe offline ask you more about what that covers and how you're thinking about that for Southeast Denver. There were some white spots on the, like, spots that weren't covered on the map, but those are also areas that have, I think it still covers the Kennedy Golf Course, but I've got a few larger parks that aren't covered in that area, so just, it was more of a curiosity of how that's being covered.
So those monitored. Are, so we have 32 antennas across the city, home base station antennas, because the majority of our central control have 450 megahertz radios. So they speak to an antenna, and then the antenna is tied to the city network. So the shading on this map is estimated antenna communication ranges.
Okay.
That we conservatively say is a mile and a half. So that area is covered by central control. The shaded area is our antenna communication range, which is estimated, which a lot of them go further than that. So that doesn't, even though an area of a district isn't shaded, it's covered. We test and communicate with all of our controllers out there. So really, sorry, that's a little misleading. Like, we're not covering outside city boundaries. That's just where an antenna can communicate to. So parks in those areas are tied into the central control network.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Which kind of leads me to my next question of, so when a resident calls, what will change for them now in the new system? Because I do get calls, we get emails, people text me.
With the OpenGov cartograph?
Mm-hmm.
Quicker.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, what does that look like on the user experience? Is it still 311, or is it, what's the open
I think, cartograph? To be important, we still have a water line, if you would, say it's Saturday, and one of your constituents saw a sprinkler going on for 15 hours, if that happened. There's still that availability just to call 311, which would dispatch somebody within the district to go address that on a weekend. But I think to Lynn's point, with cartograph, we're going to have that much quicker response. A work order is going to be put into the technician's, work assignment, where that may be delayed in yesterday's form till the next day. So what the user will see is the response time is going to increase. And with central control, our ability to maybe even be in front of that before the 311 could happen as well. So what you might see is reduced complaints, but increased response time if you do receive a complaint.
So still tell people 311.
Yeah, either way.
Behind the scenes that it gets.
Yeah, cartograph rolled out to us late June, so we're still in the implementation phase, and then this winter we're going to start developing those standard operating procedures on, you know, 311 calls. And right now it's an internal work order system, but how it's going to be rolled out to the public is to be determined.
Awesome. The central control build out, you said it's still in process. Is it still in process? Is it funded? Are there other, like, what else needs to happen? Because it sounds like you have that build out, and then the technology that is at, I'm thinking like a,
so
an
old
chart of what it looks like, of what it looks like on the ground.
That's a great question. The build out is about 95% complete. Literally every park in the city is on central control. And the only spots remaining are some of our bigger median stretches, like Spear Boulevard has about 40 controllers on it. So some of them have like one or two zones. So we're kind of waiting to leverage that with, say, irrigation improvements. Then we'll do the central control. Doesn't make sense to go out and do like 40 units on Spear that won't have as much of an impact. So the rest of the build out is gonna kind of be phased. We have big sections of Monaco, Spear, Alameda, where we literally just have a bunch of different water taps and controllers to do. So we're trying to just leverage that with other projects so that it's beneficial and efficient.
Great. You mentioned Monaco and in the parks. I know that we were having an issue there for a while of people vandalization. Yeah, I said that right. People were vandalizing and taking some of those pipes and other things. Are there new protections in place to be able to prevent that moving forward? Or
so not with the technology we're talking about, but we're trying different things. Like this year we just did plastic backflows, so they're not valuable.
That's great.
Jill started an initiative 2 years ago. We put unions on every backflow, so we take them all off in the winter. Mm. Problem is this year, the thieves are going out with like literally like Denver Water tools to shut water off and then steal the backflow. Usually once we had a backflow on and the system's activated, some people rip them out like with trucks and whatnot, but then water's spraying. Well, now they're going in and turning the water off and stealing the backflows. Mm. So we're switching to plastic. We work closely with Denver Water to come up with an approved set up to use plastic backflows. So you start seeing a lot of those out on the median areas. But yeah, the backflow theft is just a constant struggle.
And the devices are usually targeted in a small setting. So medians, small drinking fountains, different things that require something around 2 inches, fair to say. So that would be those medians that you're referring to are the targets. They're quick.
Yeah.
So
any backflow 3 inches and above is made with ductile iron, which isn't worth anything.
Okay.
It's not worth anything at the recycle areas either. So parks are pretty safe.
Okay, great. That's really good to know. Because I know that was a little bit of an issue there for us. The other question I had is, you had talked about, 85 parks, 40 years old, or, our infrastructure is 40 years old. What are the plans to update the infrastructure moving forward? Do we have, is that part of a master plan? Is that, it's a must have, not a nice to have? Like, can you talk to us a little bit more about plans moving forward for the maintenance?
So, they redo irrigation with a lot of different projects. They do a playground, they'll do new irrigation around the playground. There is a lack of just replacing full systems all at once. They're looking at City Park. Obviously, that's our largest park. They started out, it was gonna be $10 million to redo City Park. And then the next year later, I think it's gonna be $20 million to redo City Park. Yeah. And now they're upwards of like $200 million to redo. it's wild. But we have created an in-house irrigation construction crew that is focusing on brand new irrigation for parks 5 acres and less with this irrigation that's 35 years or older. So that just started this year, another in-house investment, because you crunch the numbers on brand new irrigation install and it's very expensive. And we have 3,300 acres of it out there. So that's part of the challenges I was talking about in the beginning. We have just such a huge system. There's pipes in Wash Park and City Park that are still made with, we still have lead pipe in the ground and asbestos concrete pipe. And you start talking about all the challenges of pulling that out or replacing that. So it is very challenging, but Parks is very committed to doing as much as we can.
And I might add, we have a great relationship with planning, design, and construction. This consumption report that Damian referred to back shows what we're using, but it doesn't show the number of breaks, correct? Mm-hmm. Or the amount of labor time in what park and why. Cartographs can allow us to match or mirror that. We did a real-time exercise or a cost analysis on where we're putting all our parts. I believe very wholeheartedly that if you buy it, it's not on the shelf, it's in the ground. Mm-hmm. So there's three different methods: the water management piece, the amount of labor cost, and then why are we continually repairing the same place? And so along with planning, design, and construction, we have a great relationship to provide that information and then leverage, just like Damian said, down the road, a full project.
I just think about, you know, in Southeast Denver, we have a lot of parks, which is great, very highly used because of athletics. I think they're like prioritized athletic, a lot of athletic fields.
Highest number of B fields.
Yeah, a lot of fun and very highly used all the time, right, all day long, and two golf courses. So there, and with, I think, fortunately, there's a tree canopy that has, you know, matured. And it sounds like that is all factored in as far as like the water usage, what's needed. We've talked a lot about turf, but am I correct in the assumption that you're working closely with forestry to also be able to maintain that tree canopy that's in the parks?
Yeah, forestry has a lot of rules to protect existing tree canopy for installing new irrigation. So if we have a lot of tree canopy in the area, we'll have to directionally bore. And that's a big reason for like the city park irrigation cost estimate going up. Almost the whole thing has to be directionally bored to protect trees. So yeah, we're close. And then a lot of the new irrigation projects are doing like what we talked about earlier with the hydro zoning, where we'll go run zones just to the trees. So if we ever have drought conditions in the future, you can apply less water to the grass, it can go dormant, it can bounce back the next year, but we can keep watering just the trees. So we do that in our central control as well. We label zones turf with trees, turf with no trees. So as a drought response plan, we can cut back water on just turf areas, but keep water going to the irrigation zones that have trees. So yeah, definitely a huge priority in parks.
Very collaborative.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's kudos to you for the work that you do and maintaining
you.
It. I'm really excited that you're using technology in new and innovative ways.
It's very cool.
And it's, you know, you're take, oh, what is it? Own it. You're the best in the region. You're the
what
best.
What am I, the
leadest?
Yeah. Thank you, Councilman Hines, for that.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you.
This is such a great presentation. Everyone has some questions, so we have a couple more people in the queue. Councilwoman Parity, you're up next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm so sorry for being late. This has been really great. And I was lucky enough to sit on the Parks-related committee for the bond. And so that obviously had like a huge scope, but there were some irrigation projects in there that I think our committee had really hoped to see in the bond package, and the bond being what it was, didn't make it through. But I was interested and tuned into those just because of the degree of potential water conservation. So was curious to hear a little bit more about the bullet point about the, and I apologize if I miss a little bit about this by being late, but the bullet point on how many of the systems are, what is like 40 years old or more, 85 parks with 40-year-old systems, and how those, just a little more about like what would be the biggest opportunities for water savings among those systems, like, you know, more around that, and whether any of those are budgeted for through CIP dollars anytime soon, knowing that City Park did not make it into the bond, and I at least would have hoped that it would have, but, you know, too many things.
So, Damian, do you have the in your mind the 40-year-old water savings, and then if
it's fine if it's not in your mind, to be clear,
but if possible, if we need to, we will come back with the CIP dollars for you.
Yeah, I'm super curious about that. Like, okay. what's actually
coming. Probably need to confirm with planning design.
Yeah, I don't have specific answers, but what I can say is we generally estimate. So if we convert an old park to central control, so we can save almost 20%.
Wow.
Right.
Just even
right
with the really bat. Old yeah. system.
So it's still old infrastructure that's, you know, and the pipes are going to break more often than a newer park. And it's almost similar savings if we do modern irrigation compared to the old irrigation. Mm-hmm. Then we can almost save 20% as mm-hmm. well. So
that's just
blanket numbers.
Like if you do both things,
no, they don't add. We don't save 40% because we still have to put down a lot of water. But we can kind of do, you know, it definitely does help save a little bit more.
Interesting.
And whenever we do, it is park standard. So if they go in and do a brand new irrigation system, it's going to have central control and flow sensing,
right?
And those
I gotcha.
Modern tools. But it's also going to be designed in a way where it sprays over sidewalks less. It has separate irrigation for flower beds, where old systems just spray over grass, flower beds.
But this is actually then, I mean, that's actually what you just said to me makes me really happy, because in fact, then this system is taking out, like creating a huge amount of water savings that, I mean, the fact that it's actually equivalent to replacing an old system with a new system is pretty amazing.
Correct. Yeah, you're not changing the field conditions, but you're helping direct attack to the problem quicker, because mm-hmm. it can tell you what zone has an issue, what zone has a high flow. So it does help. Yeah.
Can you answer a really silly question for me, which is if you look at one of the oldest systems versus what would be included with the new system, what's actually different? So are the pipes made of different material? Like, is it just that they're old, so they're worn out? You mentioned that it would be more tight, like maybe the sensors and things like that are better. I have no idea, but what would actually be different, like in a really technical sense?
Yeah, so pipe material, a lot of our, so I was saying the older main lines in parks, we have asbestos concrete pipe, we have lead pipe, or even if it is PVC, a little bit PVC pipe, you know, on 90 degree turns, like in a system, those are the points that weaken. So nowadays in a new system, we have a mechanical fitting there that like clamps onto the pipe and allows it to move a little bit without breaking, where an old system, if that pipe weakens and the ground settles a little bit, something like that, your pipe's cracked, you have a main break, and you're digging down. That's the other thing, the old irrigation systems in Wash Park, some of the irrigation mains are 8 feet deep. Like they install them almost like city water.
In the road, they're 10 feet.
Yeah, it's wild. Where new systems have standards, a main line is 3 feet deep, the comb lateral zones are the ones that have the sprinklers, those are I think 20 inches deep, so much more accessible, easy to work on. The new nozzles are more efficient. You've probably seen the new irrigation heads out there called MP rotators, where it looks like kind of little fingers of water. Those are they're very efficient. They have a lower precipitation rate. So you run them longer, but you have less runoff,
right,
and
you're
more
not
infiltration.
Much of this that evaporates.
Yeah. So you're using more modern equipment. The valves, the old sprinkler valves that we have out there on these 40-year-old systems are brass. Those are really expensive. We don't have plastic valves, but they're just as strong, easier to work on. There's advancements in the controls. The control technology plus the equipment as well.
All right. Well, I would love to know if any of the really old equipment is like what's slated for replacement from whatever funding sources.
I'll get that information to Jesus for you.
Yeah, but this is actually great. I feel much better about actually
the
part project not making it into the bond because of this. So thank you for that.
And knowing you, I also Brett, in my mind, you were on my mind for some reason, but there are places just because I know your passion for, you know, like forward thinking and resiliency and all that. We have areas that we run valves that don't have electricity, which I thought would be of interest to you, by solar.
Huh.
So it's not, if you could elaborate just a little bit, or
yeah, that
we don't have a power source.
Has improved greatly as well. with the lithium ion batteries.
Yeah.
So you do the same box, but we'll do like a double door one. So the solar equipment's on in one side of the box, the central control is on the front side, and then you'll see a pole with a solar panel. If you're walk between the web and the post, mm-hmm. we just did McIntosh Plaza with solar.
We'll go on a little filter.
So, it feels like it's the web's, you know, backyard, but for some reason the wire was cut, and to get new power there, we had to come from like two blocks down 14th. Huh. And so it's just like.
So you just went solar.
It costs ridiculous. Yeah, so we just went solar.
We have another area in North Federal, same way, not able to get power to the center medians where those historic trees are.
Right.
And so we've resorted to sort of battery powered or. Than if it's solar. So you were on my mind. I don't know why.
Well, and that's like one of these things where, I mean, that's such a good example of it's the solar transition. It's not just about the energy savings, right? It's also about the, like, that's like a little microgrid, you know, like that's just being, getting the power right at the source and not having to worry about all the connectivity. Well, thank you for that. I love that fact. And I was thinking about with the pipes when I used to work in a mine when I was very young. One of my many jobs in the mine. It wasn't usually underground. If I was underground, it was usually because that's where we stored extra files. But usually, I'm going to divert this entire meeting. I was 17, 18. It was fine. But we did one of our jobs in the environmental department was to test all the airflow in the pipes to make sure that they weren't corroding at the corners or getting too much sediment in them. And so we would say we go up on the catwalks and like adding test the airflow for the pipe to make sure that that it was going through at the right rate. So the pipe
very common
worn out. Anyway, that's my entire pipe knowledge. I'm just gonna love this work.
The whole place is going upside down.
I've got a vision. Listen, that's all I know about pipes. I'm done now. We're here very late.
We were here very late. And one of the conversations was about having a council roast. Now I know what I'll bring
up. We're taking notes.
Councilwoman Lewis had some questions as well.
Questions.
I just have one quick question. I have been reading about water conservation and been looking at articles that have had discussions about the upper basin and the lower basin and the concerns about how we are looking at water deficits in the future. And so I'm just curious if any of that plays into how you all are planning long-term in terms of water usage and your long-term strategy.
So I think that's reflected in kind of what we're talking about is the modern park design.
Uh-huh.
So looking at, you know, a new park, Central Park or some of the Prairie Basin parks in Northfield, where we're shifting the ratio of intensely irrigated bluegrass areas to now that's only about 30% of the park and 70% mm-hmm. of the park is native vegetation.
Got it.
You know, where you compare it to Cheeseman or Wash Park, where it's literally, you know, the whole thing is grass and trees. So definitely that's a big focus is shifting that. We're looking at landscape conversions as well. So going into some of these traditional parks and picking out, you know, underutilized areas and converting them from a bluegrass landscape to a native landscape. And then just things like this right here, irrigation technology. You know, we partnered with Denver Water from the get-go on the central control build-out. They helped fund some of it with like cost-sharing things. So they're on board with that as well.
So with the new park that is coming on board for the Park Hill, I mean, what we're calling the Park Hill Park for now, are there technologies or designs or even the native that you all are discussing that are a part of the renderings or the proposals or the questions that we are asking communities in order to be able to have those be a part of the long-term design?
I believe there's a large native area. I think there's whole areas. I think they're trying to create, like, mimic a natural stream through the middle of it, uh-huh. utilizing native vegetation. There's that big detention pond out on the northeast corner of it that's already all native grass. So I think that's a very large component of that park design, which I think is right now in the whole public process.
Yeah. We'll absolutely, Councilwoman Lewis, incorporate the hybrid approach in Park Hill Park.
Yeah.
We'll have turf-driven fields or those things for those amenities, but it'll have that hybrid approach.
Is that a part of the conversation that you all are having with communities? I just find that most folks aren't thinking about water conservation probably as often as you all are, or maybe as often as I am, and are worried about how long we might really need to start thinking and utilizing water differently.
100%.
And so I'm just curious as how are you all approaching the conversations with community to say, the reason that we're doing this is in order to be able to conserve water because, you know, we have several states who are in fights yeah. right now about water.
100%. We hold ourselves as the leader in this, and we expect ourselves to be that entity that's providing that communication and example to the communities. We have a project right now. It's called In Denver's Nature, where, we're using that media platform to exhibit just what Damian said, this hybrid approach where we had historically, large flower bed displays and massive turf areas. And so we're mindful that we can still provide an aesthetic appeal, uh-huh. but with a more water conservation-minded approach.
Lovely.
The native landscapes and the pollinator gardens and the type of plants that we can use now are mostly perennial-based. They're year after year, so we're not pulling them out and replanting them. And it should be an example to these communities that they can have that too.
Thank you so much. Is there anything that you all have that I might be able to share with my constituents, because I just want people to use less water.
And we've thought of that. I mean, even myself, I've looked at, well, I'm not a good example, sorry. I have horses, so I allow them to eat anything because I only want to mow just like a really small patch. But I'll certainly provide information through Jesus.
Thank you.
For In Denver's Nature and some of the projects, especially around you.
Thank you.
That maybe they could visit or see. But again, we hold ourselves as that entity that should be setting the example.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You all did give us some information about the native vegetation and the along Quebec, and folks were like complaining.
Right.
Real heavy about it until I told them what it was, and you all gave me information, and then I didn't get a call from another constituent after that. And so, more we can,
the more you know.
Yeah. The more I can proactively get that information out, I just would dearly appreciate it.
Of course.
And thanks for you all's work.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
For example, Quebec, they only turn the irrigation on for about 3 weeks in July.
Wow.
Out there.
Oh,
so normally, from April to October when we need to irrigate. Quebec, they just turned it on in July. And that was just because it's a new conversion.
Yeah.
So
but
moving
it would probably
forward,
be less.
Could turn it off completely.
See, those are so helpful for me to know. I'd love to share those mm-hmm. types of gems with my community so they understand. Like, these are valuable in many ways in terms of like cost savings mm-hmm. for the city, but also great for the bugs and things.
Yeah, exactly. Biodiversity.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you.
Could you send the water conservation too? I'm sorry.
No,
could you send the water conservation information to everybody?
Yeah.
For the different
consumption
things.
Report,
that's a great idea to continue to put it out in the newsletter.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you all so much. I did have one question that didn't get asked already. You mentioned that we are Denver Water's number one customer. So I'm curious if they stakeholder us when they're making these rate changes and how the rate changes in January will affect your plan.
So yeah, they involve us. They inform us before they actually get approved by their council. But we actually do have very favorable municipal rates. So we pay about $2.75 for 1,000 gallons of potable irrigation water. And for the recycled water, we only pay 30 cents for 1,000 gallons of recycled water. So, but they still affect us very much, the rate increases, especially since COVID. Before that, they'd usually only go up 1 to 2% a year, but since COVID and the different supply chain issues and all that, they've gone up, you know, 4 or 5% a year.
Usually on average, 5%.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Involve us might be the wrong word, but they do inform us before our budgeting so that we can, you know, speak with the parties.
You should tell them we're the leaderist.
Leaders.
Don't they know?
They do. So actually, Denver Water did reach out to us. Forget what year it was, where it was really rainy all the way through like late June. And they said no other municipality reduced their water use as much as Denver Parks did.
That's
so yeah, we work really closely with Denver Water. They've been a good partner with all this.
That's great. I'm glad they do at least communicate, but it would be great to know a little bit more about, or for them to work a little bit closer, it sounds like. But my other question, you had the different types of parks or different types of landscaping, including like forestry. And I was curious, how do we look at dog parks?
Dog parks don't have irrigation unless it's... there's like sometimes there's those fenced off trees in there, but that's on efficient like drip irrigation for those areas. So dog parks are just have, usually the new ones have a drinking fountain with the doggy drinking fountain on there, but zero water use.
Yeah, they're not turf minded. That's not our desired scape to put in a dog park. It's usually not sustainable at all.
So when I had that stat of 3,300 irrigated acres. The GIS staff downtown, they'll go on GIS and they'll highlight areas of the park that's irrigated. So they'll exclude pathways and dog parks and playgrounds. So when I say 3,300 acres, that doesn't include any parking lots and all that, or dog parks that are non-irrigated.
That's
or the
interesting.
The infields, the ball fields.
I think
like
one thing that I do hear from constituents is they want to go to dog parks, but then when there's nothing for their dogs to run on, so they prefer. So that's why they end up at like the nice grass parks, and then have their dog running around. But yeah, that's something I guess just to think about a little bit more. But I appreciate you all. It makes me very proud, and us as a council very proud, and I'm sure our constituents very proud when they hear about the great work that we're doing, because we don't know where our water supply will be in the future. And thank you to my colleagues for their great questions as well.
Thank you.
That's it.
We appreciate you having us and letting us display something that we're really proud of too. And I owe a couple follow-ups through Jesus. So Councilwoman Parody, I'd be happy to get you the CIP.
Thank you.
And Councilwoman Lewis, your question as well, more about in Denver's nature and how your community can be, you know, receptive to maybe exploring that in their own yards.
That's right.
So.
Thank you. Yeah. And probably, Jesus, if you could send to the whole council. And then Councilman Hines wanted to say one more thing.
Yeah, just to put it on your radar, I've mentioned this before. We want the entire city to be part of the transition to native vegetation. And so, you know, Councilmember Lewis, part of most of her areas outside of the Inverted L, like Cheeseman Park.
Yep.
I think there are spots outside of the jogging paths. It makes a lot of sense to convert to native vegetation. So
we have looked at that.
We're ready to take the nasty emails that might happen, help with some education as well as to why it's happening.
Yeah, so. It's a really valid point. We want water here for not only my grandchildren, but theirs.
Correct.
And so,
luckily in Denver, it's like you just have to push that button. Like everybody has that value in this town. And then they're like, oh, maybe not everybody.
Well, yes. Let's say everybody does.
Most
Let's
people.
Hope and dream that. And I just want to let everyone know nothing's on consent, so we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.